Now, clearly, the last few months have seen a huge number of changes in our everyday lifestyles and so on. And when it comes to food, clearly that's another impact. But it seems that there are lots of habits that might well be set to stay, certainly for the foreseeable future, as a recent report by both Birds Eye and Iceland has demonstrated. Who better then to actually coordinate our thoughts with respect to this than one of our favourite co-presenters, the first time we've actually connected via the magic of Zoom, of course, ace writer, author, speaker, broadcaster, and indeed the founder of Young Money, the first British website dedicated to young people's finances. It is the fabulous Iona Bain. How are you, Iona?
Oh, thank you, Alex. What a lovely introduction.
Well, always the way we like to keep these standards. We might have changed the medium in which we communicate, but at least we can keep those standards going, which is great.
Indeed, indeed.
Talk us through this particular report in terms of obviously making use of frozen food, getting avoiding food waste. What are the key highlights from your own point of view?
Yeah, so this research from Birds Eye in Iceland, which is really the first of its kind, shows just how much frozen food is coming into its own during lockdown. Because as you mentioned, so many of our daily habits have deeply changed. And that is particularly true of the way we shop for food, because obviously there are huge numbers of restrictions on supermarkets at the moment. So we have to be much more organized in how we buy food. Also, lots of us are being much more careful with money right now because money is tight. We're having to really tighten our belts. And also, of course, we've been spending a lot more time at home and cooking more meals from scratch. So as a result, about a third of people overall are using their freezer more efficiently. And it looks like 25% of shoppers are going to continue to buy more frozen food, even as we come out of lockdown, because I think they realize just how much money they could save in the process. A study from Manchester Metropolitan University, which was published today by Birds Eye in Iceland, shows that families could save up to £1,500 a year by switching from fresh to frozen. And that is a huge amount of money to be saving right now.
Absolutely. I was interested, particularly in that Manchester Metropolitan University study. Fascinating to find that actually £188 million worth of food is being wasted nationwide each week, which is pretty much, there's a lot of food waste out there. So, I mean, maybe this is one of the good things that comes out of lockdown, that actually we realise that, we need to, to use the classic phrase, waste not, want not.
Yeah, absolutely, Alex. I completely agree. And in fact, 46% of people in the East Midlands say they have become more conscious of how much food their household wastes since lockdown began. So it is a real silver lining of this otherwise very difficult period that people are being much more mindful of the food that they buy and making sure that they use every bit of it up rather than throw it away. Because prior to lockdown, actually, Iceland and Birds Eye found that we were wasting £188 million worth of food each week. So that is 15p of every £1 just going down the drain. And that's something that I think we'll all want to try to reduce as we come out of lockdown. And that is possible by switching more to frozen food, because this research also finds that actually you can reduce your food waste by up to 48% just by switching from fresh to frozen.
Lots of universities going into blended learning and such like stuff. So lots of our students will be coming back to campus and so on, but in a completely different environment. Presumably, this advice is really good for them as well to actually ensure that they don't simply say, oh, well, what the hey, we'll let it go to waste.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, Alex, because actually, this research has shown that 26% of 18 to 24 year olds are buying more frozen food, and 31% are seeking out new types of frozen food, such as alternatives to meat. So I think that as students perhaps get back to some kind of normality in the next academic year, maybe it won't be quite the same as it was, but they're still going to have to be very mindful of their budgets. And I've write the Young Money blog, and I've been advising young people for many years now to consider buying more frozen food as a way to save money, because actually, otherwise, they are going to end up spending way more of their student loan on food than they really need to. And a lot of it is down to confidence. Unfortunately, young people just don't get that solid grounding in home economics that they're used to. And I don't want to sound like a fuddy-duddy when I say that, but
You could
really
never
have
do that, Iona. You could
Oh,
never be that kind, do you?
good.
No.
Phew. But I really do believe that young people who understand the benefits of cooking their meals from scratch, using both fresh and frozen ingredients, but especially more frozen ingredients, they not only can benefit their their wallets, but their waistlines as well. And in the long term, I think young people who are able to cook their own meals are healthier and wealthier.
Some excellent advice, Iona. Where would you point people if they've been listening to this and they'd like to find out more details about your own blog site and indeed others?
Yeah, sure. So if you want to check out my blog, it's youngmoneyblog.co.uk. I'm on Twitter at Iona Young Money, and you can find out more about the research by following Birdseye UK and Iceland Foods on Twitter at Birdseye UK and at Iceland Foods.
It has been a genuine pleasure, and I just realised I didn't have my camera on this end, but never mind.
It's oh, that's okay.
All good, Iona. Delighted to connect with your good self, and be safe. We'll connect with you again, I'm sure, in the not-too-distant future. Keep on keeping on. Bye for now.
Absolutely. Thanks, Alex.
Now, clearly the impact of the coronavirus period is going to have resonances for, well, the foreseeable future, and not least of which is the whole challenge with respect to funerals. As people will possibly be aware, places of worship in England are gradually beginning to be able to reopen for prayers and services, with weddings having a maximum of 30 people from, of course, the 4th of July. But, and it is a very important but, singing is still a way of transmitting the virus, and it's still banned at funerals. So to talk us through this, and indeed a list of the nation's favourite funeral hymns, we're delighted to welcome from the Co-op Funeral Care, the funeral director of Co-op Funeral Care, Mike Pengelly. How are you, Michael?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self, even though, as I say, we're just getting our head around this whole system of technology. Normally, I'm in a studio this time around. It's and well, thank heavens for Zoom, one might well say, but there we are.
Yeah.
Talk us through this particular system, basically, because obviously a funeral is a very stressful period of time at the best of times. And you know, people want to have the best send off, and there are all kind of manners with respect to that. So actually having the right accompanying music can be so essential to really those who are left behind in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think probably worth me to start by saying how incredibly challenging time it's been in the funeral care profession. You know, lots of restrictions, changes in rules, and that's made it really challenging for funeral directors up and down the country to give the kind of funeral that perhaps was more traditional, if you like, before, you know, prior to restrictions coming in.
I think at some period of times we were actually looking potentially at mass graves and unmarked graves and all sorts of things. Thankfully, we managed to avoid that.
Yeah, we did. And that's down to the hard work and dedication of the colleagues who work with me and the rest of the funeral directors up and down the country. And I think, you know, I think we've got to remember the families here, you know, potentially for them, not able to say the best goodbye they wanted for their loved one. And you are right. We've managed to avoid the mass grave scenario that we saw in some other countries. In New York, for example, was one of those. But I think it's even harder for families now in times where there's an unexpected loss of a loved one, and it adds even more weight to the grieving. And then you take things away from them, like hymns is just one part of this. Of course, there's been restrictions on social distancing, the amount of mourners that can go to a funeral. But it's, you know, it's certainly been a big part of a funeral. It's steeped in tradition, hymns, and it's been quite distressing for families, and to comfort them, really.
I mean, one's initially tempted, I suppose, and it's probably that dark humour side of me coming across here, to think, well, maybe we could have an album saying, now that's what I call the most popular funeral hymns ever. But talk us through these top 10 hymns. I mean, were there any surprises from your own point of view? I mean, most of them seem to be very much the traditional format that we look through. The top five, effectively, Amazing Grace, How Great Thou Art. The Lord is My Shepherd, number three, All Things Bright and Beautiful. Maybe an unusual one, maybe for a funeral. And Abide With Me, of course, the awesome Abide With Me coming in at number one. Were you surprised?
Yeah, quite surprised, actually. I think the All Things Bright and Beautiful coming in at number two was interesting.
Yeah. I think it's more associated, I would have thought, with Sunday schools and life, etc. But I can see a point, actually, in terms of a celebration of a life.
Yeah, and I think what it taught me was that actually it's not always about the words, it's about the memory, the melody of the hymn. You know, when you look at some of these, look at some of the ones that are sung at sporting events across the country. Abide With Me at the FA Cup final. Jerusalem is sang at the cricket. Cal on Land is a famous Welsh hymn that's sang by both football and rugby fans. So you've got, there's a lot of memory in these. It's not always, for lots of people, mean lots of different things. And I think it just goes to show, actually, whilst there's been a move towards more Contemporary music more recently, you know, we've definitely seen that. That's played out through the speakers at the venue of where the funeral's taking place. Actually, these are important hymns for lots of people steeped in history, steeped in tradition. Ancestors have had the same hymn. I'm a proud Welshman. I can speak for some of the guys that live up in the valleys there, but you know, Cal on Lan will be a hymn that is, it means a lot. And it's not always about the words. It's more just about, that was at my grandfather's funeral, that was at my great grandfather's funeral. It's the tradition of, you know, the risk of not being able to play that. It's really distressing for fans, but we are finding ways of doing that actually through, you joked about the now that's what I call top 10 hymns. Maybe that's something someone could bring out. I don't know, but there is,
it's a possibility. Well, we can take the profits between us, Michael, for that original thought.
But in all seriousness, there is ways we are trying to help families now. There's different ways of doing funerals. I think that's the point now. So we are looking at things like live streaming, playing it through the speakers of the service, the venue. But actually, we're looking at other things now to help the family. So things like offering a cortege service, and this is where the hearse will page up and down a venue that is really important to that family. And we've seen some amazing examples of communities coming together, socially distancing, of course, coming out on their doorstep, if you like. You know, like a bit like clapping for the NHS, you know, it's that type of thing where the hearse pages up the street. People have been playing music at those events. It's brought, I was going to say mass gatherings. It's not mass gatherings, but you're socially distanced on your doorstep for those people who may not have even been able to go to the funeral. So we are finding different ways. And delayed memorial service is another good one, actually, which we just brought in, which is have the, for all intents and purposes, have the committal now, but actually the service, if we delay that and help you arrange it at a later date, we can actually help you say goodbye. And hopefully when those restrictions are lifted at a later date, we will be able to sing the hymns. We will be able to hug our family and friends. And those are the things that often really matter to people, to families and people in society.
Absolutely, Michael. And I think each generation, if we look back historically, has kind of had its own way of dealing with mourning and reflection and so on. And it's a time, as we said at the start, where sensitivity is obviously needed. And again, the appropriate lines as well. Presumably, simply go to the Co-op website for further details. Well, where would you point people to actually, if they're contemplating, or indeed they are in need of actually sorting things through, where would you actually suggest people should go?
The Co-op website's a good starting point, but I would also encourage to go and speak to the local funeral director or the funeral arranger in the branches that are dotted around up and down the country, because there are so many complexities right now. If you think about kind of devolved nations, there's slightly different rules, even within the churches themselves and the crematoriums, there's different rules on the number of mourners, there's different risk assessments that have been completed. So there's a lot of complexity in the, more complexity than ever, if you like, in arranging the funeral and getting the very best kind of service and for what the family needs. So my advice would be, yes, look on the website, but equally pop down to one of the branches or make the phone call. And our skilled and professional staff, who I have to say I'm so proud of during coronavirus, how they've stepped up. And I'm really proud of the families who've understood what's been going on as well. And usually from that conversation that happens between the family and the funeral director ends up with, even with all the restrictions, coming up with a service that is unique to that individual and fits the bill for what they want. And that's what I would urge them to do.
And from the top 10, I must admit, I'm torn between The Lord Is My Shepherd and Amazing Grace in terms of my own personal favourites. Are you still sticking with Cal on Lan as your number one choice?
It'd have to be Cal on Lan, otherwise I think I'd get lynched back in Wales, all the people who, if I said something different. So it'd have to be Cal on Lan. But in all seriousness, sport is a big deal to me. So it does have a kind of steeped in tradition history for me. So it'd definitely be that one.
Perhaps You'll Never Walk Alone could be in there as well, but it's just a thought, really. Never mind. Michael Pengelly, it's been wonderful connecting with your good self. Stay well, stay safe, and continue the excellent work. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you.
Right, well, we continue with the Midweek Drive, and we're delighted now to be able to welcome all the way from Los Angeles, in fact, actually our first Los Angeles correspondent, even beating Phil Learness. I know Annette Andre is coming in later on, but it's Larry Nemechek. Welcome, Larry, through the medium of this subspace radio technology.
And I don't think the Romulans are jamming us, so we're doing well.
What Donald Trump gets up to. Oh, no, step away from that. Step away from the whole sort of sequence. We are living in a Star Trek world. Clearly, the COVID-19 virus. Yesterday, I was actually watching Miri. I was watching about the life prolongation experiments, the line from that perspective. Thankfully, we haven't gone down that route as yet, but nobody, I would suggest, would have ever anticipated the kind of things we have kind of been forced into doing, like this radio interview, for instance.
Well, yes. Nobody would have guessed it as of February or March, but no. Yes, exactly. And yeah, it's a Star Trek future because we're all coming at each other in little boxes talking on screen. Yeah, and whoever had stock in Zoom is just, they're just set tight for the rest. Yeah.
That is one of the things I made. And I think people can relax. I've had one or two people who were panicking because they didn't want Zoom because they thought, oh, it's going to hack into our data. No, that's all been sort of, I've spoken to several IT professionals who say everything is okay. The encryption services are all right. We're not going to be Zoom bombed by Romulans or indeed artificial intelligences. All is well from that point of view. So just.
Yeah, that was an early concern. The whole world, well, if you Zoomed it all, suddenly you had passwords to deal with. But no,
Anyway, moving on. For me, 2020 is probably in sci-fi fandom terms, and certainly for Trek fandom terms, really going to be viewed as the year of the virtual convention. I was speaking to George Mann at a previous show, and he did a virtual convention for Lucasfilm. I know, another franchise entirely, but that's going into the San Diego.
I'll get you cross streams. It's fine. Yeah,
exactly. That was used in the San Diego virtual Comic Con. We've got other Comic Cons there. Have you done any as yet for Trek as yet in terms of virtual online things?
Yes. Well, very well. Trek and cross genre. There was a little convention I was going to for the first time this year called, it was in Detroit. It was a Makers. And right out of the gate, you would think, like in March and April, they said they went down, they decided to cancel, postpone, and right away said, we're going to do virtual conventions and let some of their panels just go over and be virtual. And at the same time, I said, well, I have some things I do online already. Podcast and a couple of shows, can we just brand them and do them as part of your, and they went, yeah, sure, do it. So some of the earliest things I did, aside from my Tuesday live Facebook show that I've done, and then our podcast that we record, the Trek Files, I added two things on a Friday and Saturday morning with different arrangements. The Friday one we still do, called Life Support Live, with a geek psychologist, Dr. Ali Matu. I said, two doctors, one of us is actually not fake, but Dr. Trek, but then very quickly after that, and I was talking on my show about, you know, will virtual save fandom this year? And it's turned out to be so, but even more than I expected. Comic-Con San Diego is doing recorded virtual panels, and I've already recorded one for them.
Yeah.
I've had a friend that organized a whole original weekend called Lockdown Con. And I did a panel or two with that. But a lot of other entities, there's a convention called Galaxy Con in Florida that was a big Comic-Con, and they've organized a huge amount of virtual. But like Kate Mulgrew is doing her own virtual series, like tea parties, and she lets six fans apply. And Alexander Siddig and his Sid City group are doing virtual, very laid-back meetups. So some of them, there's like a cost involved, or there's an upsell where you can come for free, but they'll do a private meet. But most of the places are doing, they managed to figure out some way to do a free thing. And what's funny, Alex, is a lot of people are at these meetups online that never got a chance to go to a convention.
Yeah, no, it's
it's kind of been a revolution that way for people. Yeah. So we're all wondering just what's going to stick. You know, what will be when we're finally back to quote unquote normal, whatever that is. How much of this?
I mean, I've been gearing up from my professional life to obviously deliver lectures online, to deliver blended learning, because clearly, as far as the students are concerned at the University of Lincoln, We're not going to be on full force. We're going to have to do a mixture of both and see how things go from there. Thankfully, you'd be pleased to know, Larry, that our American correspondents managed to get back to the States safely. Not sure whether they wanted to get back to the States, but to North Carolina and so on. Oh, Jessica good. Made it back. So all was good with that. Let's move on a little bit, because actually you mentioned something there which I thought was really quite interesting in terms of the way that people relate to each other online, and the fact that actually we are living in that scenario where, as your fellow columnist in the Star Trek magazine, Chris Dowes would actually say, the technology is there that we're getting used to much more screen-based interaction that would have been inconceivable. Certainly what we're doing now a few years ago. I mean, not inconceivable, but it would have been the flights of fantasy, shall we say.
I have said almost since the beginning, too, that thank God we're doing this. You know, if we had to have a pandemic, how much better on the nerves and our sanity that it's now than just, even 10 years ago, it would have been the techie, I feel like it's like the ham radio days, like in the early 20s when it was a crystal set, were a hobbyist. And within 10 years, we had network radio and, big time. And, and that's what I feel like this has been like.
Yeah. It's certainly opened up a whole range of things. I must admit, there was one well-known Star Trek alumni from the original series who I think, I'm not sure. Actually, to be fair, I don't think it's his choice exactly. But we were talking about meeting the fans, etc., and it came from a very good, credible journalistic source that he was charged, the fans were being charged £400 for a 2-minute online session. I think that's a bit steep. I think that's a bit steep. In terms of ways forward,
my mind as I was talking about the glorious new world.
I mean, obviously, Larry, we're trying to get. We're trying to get you up to at least £300 per session, and you know that that's the case. But we'll see.
Well, I can't take a pound over 200. Well, I just refuse to be in that camp.
Yes. Let's move on to Star Trek Monthly. Has there been any change in your professional work for Star Trek Magazine, or has it been a case of no? If people ask me how the Enterprise bridge is blown up, I'll respond to it because it's online, so it hasn't really changed at all. Because you haven't had to meet in any editorial system.
For my sake, and for I imagine most of the actual writers of that magazine, since you've switched on that particular channel to talk about. Yeah. I mean, I'm here. They're in London. I mean, it's all been virtual. What's been funny about this, all the stay at home that we've had, is I work at home anyway. Now my wife is at home working, but I'm pretty much, what I'm missing is the 10% of the time or the 20% of the time I would get out to event, obviously the conventions, but in a day-to-day world, just going to have lunch with people and meeting, whether it was for business or otherwise. But no, with Star Trek Magazine, I'm doing the same thing. And to their credit, so far, economically, there's been no slowdown. So I'm still we're still in a bi-monthly mode for now, and I'm churning out my columns. And
I have duly renewed my subscription, so all's well with the world. Interesting, I've also passed on best wishes from, of course, the organizers of the convention where we first met, of course, which was Sci-Fi Scarborough, which was one of the early victims of the whole COVID-19 system. Again, in terms of Star Trek, the other thing which I'm fascinated by is the other big event that's been taking place has been the Black Lives Matter protests and the lines from that point of view. Now, there are those of us, and I think kind of we're comparable chronological times periods on the planet, who would say, well, actually back in the 60s, not that we were necessarily politically active then, but certainly when we became, in terms of college age, 70s and 80s and so on, we were aware that this was at the heart of Gene Roddenberry's infinite diversity and infinite combinations philosophy. And it's almost as though we still haven't quite caught up with that, that actually we do need to think that diversity does work. And it's interesting that there's been an awful lot of kickback and pushback to the new series in particular, when those things have kind of been made quite explicit, almost as though it's a case of, well, hang on a minute here. Have you missed the point of the original Star Trek ideology?
Yes. I mean, I first noticed we had quote unquote conservative Star Trek fans, maybe during the Reagan years. And you thought, well, I'm sorry, did you, there was an old phrase that used, there was a target for pitching stories that was a joke that they had pinned up in the offices. And one of the responses you could hit with the dart was, I'm sorry, have you even watched the show? for pitching stories. But I always think of that when I hear that. But then again, I, it's like some people, they see the space battles and the uniforms and the pew pew, we say, and they miss the point of the whole thing. But no, yes, it's and when you consider that Star Trek came about during Vietnam and the civil rights struggle, the original one, and we just figured, Rachel Carson and the original first wave of the environmental movement, and Gene was like, will we blow ourselves up? Will we poison the planet? No, look, Star Trek, we've survived.
Yeah.
That was the and whole...
It's that optimism that I think is very much at the heart of the process. We've had time now to really reflect on three brand new series, obviously two Discovery seasons and Picard and various other subtle ones as well have been coming through. We're hearing about the possibility still of a Section 51 system that's coming through.
Section 31.
Yeah, 20 years ahead, you see. Section 31. And I could have said that, but I knew that they'd be watching me.
Yes, okay.
And, of course, the new worlds which might see Chris Pike and that particular incarnation of the Enterprise going. And yet, on the other hand, it's almost as though your parents are having a divorce, because that joining together that you said, which was so positive, still seems to be, I don't know, Alex Kurtzman tends to be a little bit of a Marmite character. He doesn't seem to have the same sort of balance overall that Rick Berman had.
I'm not sure I know what you.
I'm just in terms of actually feeling that you're in. Say, I mean, maybe I've just been looking at the wrong online sites, but I know that Alex Kurtzman in particular has taken an awful lot of flack, far more than Berman ever did, and for a different reason. I mean,
Wow, Alex. Okay, 2 points. Number one, do you not remember the aughts? Rick Berman took an awful lot of time. Do you remember all the Photoshop memes where he says, we'll destroy franchise for food? And he's like a beggar man on the side. He took a lot of flack over that and eventually lost his job. But no, I think you there's another one you could have mentioned, which is hashtag Lower Decks, the animated series that's coming. They just, I know they have not mentioned what it's going to be in the UK and the rest of the world outside US and Canada yet, but it's all, it's CBS All Access here, the home thing. But they just announced finally a debut date of August 6th. And I would have to think they're going to come up with a partner. One of the outlets is going to carry it. I've got to think that. But with the animated series, with another animated series coming, Aaron McDonald, the science advisor, basically reminded us, and I think it's out there, that there are six series in either development or starting. And a couple of them they haven't confirmed yet. But Section 31 is in there. They've been working on it for a long time. It's out there that they've been working. But I think it's more a case that so many people are convinced, because he had a hand in the Kelvin movies also, that Alex doesn't know what he's doing and all that. But I think they very earnestly want to make money for themselves and for CBS.
Sure.
And they want to give fans a good show. I think there's been a learning curve. We always laugh about how every time there's a gap in a redo of Star Trek, there's it takes a while. The well-oiled machine doesn't start off being well-oiled. And it takes a while. And Discovery had such horrible birth pangs.
Yeah.
Losing its dad early on. And all of that. And then Picard was a much easier birth. But not only that, but they actually, a lot of people keep lumping Discovery and Picard together, but they really do have very different tones and very different aims. And I think the more we roll up Strange New World, when it comes down the pike, and even the animated series are different from each other. The other one is going to be on Nick Trek and be on Nickelodeon here, at least. And, be more young adult versus this one was kind of like a snarky adult kind of animation. Anyway, I think the more new Star Treks come out, the more I think people will see it's a buffet, and that if anything, Alex hires the people, they come in, he Dick Wolfs it, he is the name on the nameplate, gets it launched.
Yeah.
And you can see more variety, and I think some of that will drop.
Well, the campaign for me is to surely bring back Lieutenant Moress and Lieutenant Arix from the original animated series. I think, they've been sadly overlooked, and they need to actually sort of be moved into the situation.
Well, it's their style of animation, but here's one for you, Alec. The doctor of the Lower Decks is a little bit of an upstairs downstairs situation, and the main focus is on the ensigns below decks.
Yeah.
But they are showing you the command crew, the captain and engineer and all that, and the doctor is a female Cation. Just so you know, a cranky Cation. So if it's not Moriss, It will at least be your furry
There's nothing wrong with a furry first officer or officer in the ranks within the whole system. Absolutely.
Right.
I'm just sort of wrapping this up, but as you can see, my actual portable device here, on which I actually have the digital copy and digital edition of Star Trek magazine. Holodeck Goes West. We know Gene Roddenberry sold Star Trek to the network as wagon trains into the stars to help them understand the concept. In what other ways was Star Trek related or compared to Westerns, either thematically or indirectly? I've often said science fiction, in many ways, it kind of became almost a Western in certain areas, but in other zones, I mean, I've done a paper which I'm probably delivering online for another conference in the autumn, which, or the fall, in America, obviously, where we'll be talking about how there's a big similarity. Oops, you seem to have gone. Are you still there?
I'm here. I see you.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's okay. Yeah. The screen's gone completely blank here, but as long as we're still working, that's okay. Oh, we're coming through on that sort of basis. The line that I was actually doing was very much a case of a relationship between James Kirk and James Cook, the explorer, of course, who discovered Australia and various other bits and pieces. Is that something which, again, I think, you know, could be another sort of angle that we could approach and do various other bits and pieces there? I've got you back now, Larry. Sorry, I, as a male, as you appreciate, I'll explain this to the listener, multitasking is really difficult. Something goes wrong, and this is what concerns me about my online lectures, etc. Like, what? Where? It's different when I've got the controls in the radio studio, but still,
carry on. Alec, you know, I've been using Zoom for 5 years for Portal 4. Not Zoom, but free conference call. We've been virtualizing for 5 years.
Yeah, you see, and me, two point two weeks. I didn't even have broadband until July this year.
Not 2 months, but 2 weeks. Wow. Okay. No, you're doing fine for a rookie. You're doing just fine. That's an interesting point. I mean, about the Western and some of them, like, you know, like, that's an inherently American, you know, format. But the thing was, even though there were a lot of Western shows back in the heyday of the Western, they became nuanced. You had Western comedies, Western detective shows.
You got
Western
Bonanza, you got the Wild Wild West, you got
the Wild Wild West. Yeah, another James West.
Exactly,
right?
Yes. James Cook, James West, it's all Jim.
You say that about James Cook because one of the things, you know, this long-time debate about, well, Starfleet's obviously a military organization because you have ranks and people defer to ranks and you have ships and it's naval and all that. And Gene himself would say, no, it's not a military show. It's a scientific exploratory mission. And people said, that makes no sense. But they go to the 18th century, 19th century British Navy example and say, well, of course, they're representing the government and they're out there and they go to war if they have to. But they're mainly exploring and collecting data and doing cultural surveys. I think you're James Cook. Metaphor. Well,
I was originally drawn to it by remembering something that I saw in an interview with Gene Roddenberry about Captain Horatio Hornblower.
Mm-hmm.
And the line there, obviously, that was written by C.S. Forrester and the fictional character of Hornblower. And then clearly, I mean, I'm actually talking to you now from the home and the birthplace of James Cook, not quite literally, but in the same sort of zone where he was actually born in the northeast of England, a little bit further north than Whitby. And then the more I kind of read into, clearly on the 200th anniversary of his voyages, he has three voyages, he goes through explorations and so on. I thought there's a lot of comparisons between those two sort of characters. So again, I'll share it with you and you can sort of say, well, that was rubbish or whatever.
no, spot on. Yes.
Larry, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with you. Good stuff today. We will be joined hopefully in the not too distant future by the editor, former editor of SFX magazine, now fine freelance senior contributor, Richard Edwards, who's just been writing on, I'll show you this wonderful thing, the anniversary of Flash Gordon.
Oh, yes. The movie or the original?
The movie. Okay. So we'll work through that. And it's been fantastic connecting with your good self in Los Angeles. Even though the technology has changed, the questions remain the same. Otherwise, clearly, it just wouldn't evolve in all so many ways. So
I would hope so.
Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer connection with us today? Has it been okay for you?
I would say even more than interesting. Yes.
Wow. Do you know, for a moment there, I just had a little flashback to a scene from Picard where Picard actually speaks to an admiral and she actually says, shut the something up. But I think, no, step away from that. So there are too many F-bombs in the new Star Trek series.
Oh, no.
Step away from that.
I'm well used to your hubris,
Alex. So, and hopefully there are people who watch Picard who will appreciate that, which is good. So the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again? I certainly via this mechanism in the very near future. Will you return?
I would hope so. Please do. Yes. Look, operative word being look. Yes. Or see you or whatever.
Hailing frequencies for the moment closed. 40 years, 40 English years, possibly 40 Mongo years ago, a great movie was launched and a movie that still resonates today. And he says, holding up to the microphone, in the current edition of SFX magazine, a superlative, in-depth feature article on Flash Gordon, written by none other than the former editor of aforementioned SFX, now extremely wonderful science fiction writer and coping with lockdown in a science fiction world in all so many ways. Richard Edwards, welcome back to the Midweek Drive.
Well, I was just born when it first came out, but I remember watching it on TV when there were sort of, you know, when you sort of really wanted to watch Star Wars on TV, but you couldn't watch Star Wars on TV, so you'd watch anything with space in it. And there's lots of stuff in it that really stuck with me. I mean, it's a film unlike any other, I reckon.
Yeah. I mean, I was very surprised with one of the factoids you put in the article about it actually grossing more in the UK than Raiders of the Lost Ark. Because obviously they're both similar time zones from that point of view. And Raiders of the Lost Ark was obviously an homage, as Flash Gordon was, to, you know, past Saturday morning serials.
Yeah, I mean, Raiders of the Lost Ark obviously did a lot better in America. I think Flash Gordon, I mean, it had the feel of a British film in a lot of ways. I mean, there was a lot of Italian, there's an Italian producer and there's a lot of Italian crew on it. And, you know, apart from Sam Jones as Flash Gordon and Melody Anderson as Dale Arden, you know, it was a predominantly British cast, or certainly a predominantly European cast. So it kind of had this feel of being sort of the Brits and Europeans doing their own Star Wars.
I'm always tempted to say that if we actually did a little mashup of Mike Hodges, the director's work, we probably would have had, is there a Mr. Gordon in the house? As opposed to Mr. Carter. Get Carter, of course, was one of his main things. And in fact, one of my colleagues at Lincoln, big friends with Mike Hodges, I think he prefers to be remembered for Get Carter as opposed to Flash Gordon, but he likes them both.
Yeah, having spoken to him, he's very fond of the movie and had lots of interesting stories and was very, I think, very fond of the cast and the people he worked with. And, you know, Dino De Laurentiis, who was the producer, and it was kind of his dream project. And he was very much this sort of, he was a movie mogul and he had this reputation for being very hard. But Mike Hodges, you know, and he says, put this in the feature there, you know, he actually worked out a way of working with him and he came to quite like him. And he had this passion for Flash Gordon, this character that he had watched in the 1930s serials. You know, people had gone back to the cinema to watch, and it had really stuck with him. And he kind of it was this passion project. And obviously, George Lucas, you know, he wanted to make a Flash Gordon movie, you know, and Dino De Laurentiis wouldn't sell him the rights. And so George Lucas thought, oh, well, I have to make my own then. And, you know, Star Wars kind of turned out okay, but
it was a minor little hit, really. I mean, I'm not sure whether Kathleen Kennedy would still endorse that. But then again, that's a different line for another debate, another conversation. I love the line that I think came out of one of your questions to Mike Hodges, where you said that he would say something to De Laurentiis. He'd go away the next day and say, I've had the great idea. And then he'd repeat his own idea back to him. No names, Richard, but has that ever happened to you in your editorial days or indeed your writing days?
I can't remember that specifically, but I mean, there are certainly that sounds like a good way of managing a boss, you know, upward management, isn't it? Yeah.
it worked well. Melody Anderson, of course, I felt was really going to have a tremendous career, but apart from a few other areas, and maybe it's because obviously she was a natural blonde and then raw brunette and so on, disappointed to find she sort of tended to fade away. I mean, we were fortunate enough last year, actually, at the Sci-Fi Weekend to connect with both Sam Jones and Gordon's Alive, the main man. Brian Blessed, exactly. this is what I call the COVID-19 mind, where you're just getting used to things like online things. I mean, anyway, we're getting through it. What's Melody? I mean, she seemed to be very fond of it, and in fact, she even put in a bid, I think, at the end, saying that if they do make another version of Flash Gordon, she'd be up for being a grandmother.
Well, yeah, playing a grandmother role in the characters. Yeah, I think Melody was lovely to speak to. She was very fond of the movie, and it is, and I think just totally gets that people love it because it is a bit weird and you know, it's a bit campy and a bit over the top and funny, you know, because. Mm. It is a funny film. You know, there are bits that are played for laugh. I mean, the screenwriter on it was Lorenzo Semple Jr., who also wrote the Batman TV show in the 60s, which definitely isn't serious. And there's a similar sensibility here. You know, there's people say, I mean, Melody Anderson had to say, Flash, I love you, but we've only got 14 hours to save the Earth. And she had to say it with an entirely straight face. I mean, it's a hilarious line, but because the characters don't play up the jokes, you know, they make it funny, and it's not a spoof like Airplane, but it's kind of got this kind of knowing feeling of being funny.
And in so many ways, that really was the success of the Batman 66 series, that actually the actors, Adam West, Burt Ward, Yvonne Craig, and others, they all actually played it straight. Because if they actually did a nodding wink to the camera, it would have all gone down tubes. You might have got another Artemis Fowl. I'm sorry, I had to mention it. Have you seen it, Richard?
I haven't watched it yet. Well,
another magazine, which is headed up by Jordan Royce, basically said that you should not watch it at all. I've yet to see a review that's gone higher than 2 stars on it, but somehow, just seeing Dame Judi Dench as a leprechaun secret police person saying top of the morning to you just kind of makes it worthwhile. It's just, I can see, you know, having said that, it's not great. It's not great. If you're Artemis,
I guess it's what a whole career has been working towards, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, you know, people thought it was the high spot of being M in the James Bond movies. It might have been the you know, Shakespearean role she's put together and the various other zones that's there. No, I think probably being a leprechaun is one of her way forwards. People actually thought probably she'd actually peaked with her role as a cat in the musical Cats, but I think she's gone one further. Wonderful.
Yeah, it's not been the greatest 6 months of her career, has it? In America.
Speaking of greatest 6 months, how have you been coping with this bizarre thing? Or has it been a case of business as usual? I don't care. I'm a sci-fi person. As long as I've got sound on my computer and I can interview people, all's well with the world.
Well, you know, being freelance and working from home normally, it's not that much of a change. The big change has actually been that I've got my wife and daughter at home at the same time, so as well as
schooling.
A lot of maths, bit of making stuff, bit of learning bits of English that I didn't know, which is a bit embarrassing when you're a journalist. But
existential, daddy, tell me what existential means.
Yes, or fronted adverbials. Well, I don't know. So yeah, I mean, it's been learning. I mean, yeah, it's become kind of normal. I mean, it's fine, but I would like, it'd be nice to get out and nice to go to the cinema and everything. And
I mean, I was tempted to actually invite Tara Bennett across for this one, but I thought, no, I've just been on Zoom, so to speak, for about 2.5 weeks. Prior to that, I thought it was a 1960s ice lolly. It's an old joke, but I still say it. and I think it is quite interesting that normally on a Wednesday, which is when we're recording the whole thing, or you do it on a Thursday, been in the studio doing it live, you know the system, you've seen them, been at the other end of a telephone, etc. This is kind of working. Having said that, it is something which maybe the science fiction world did prepare us for, that we're used to this kind of communicating. And with conventions being there as well, I was speaking last week to George Mann, who was doing a virtual panel for Lucasfilm for the virtual San Diego Comic Con, which of course you've attended and reported to Siren Radio live from as well, from that point of view. I mean, will you be going online to check out San Diego and others as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it will. And this is something, I guess, that a lot, you know, we've watched a lot of movies about, you know, dare I say, apocalyptic scenarios. But one
thing, the Amiga Man was what we kept coming through to myself. Basically, I was just waiting for Charlton Heston to come out.
But Charlton Heston never learned to Zoom, and he never Skyped anybody.
No.
And I think you
take
know,
your hands off me, you damn dirty Skypers. He would have said.
Yeah, I think that what, you know, one of the few pluses about when this has happened is that we're in a point where we have got all this technology that we can stay in touch and we can see each other. You know, if you think if this was 20 years ago, it would have felt very different. And, you know,
Richard, in my case, 2 months ago, I didn't have Wi-Fi in a domestic environment. I didn't have anything on this sort of basis because I'd rely completely on the university stuff. So I've been through that very sharp learning curve, even plugging it in the right place. So there we are.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people, I mean, that one thing, my daughter has become very adept with tech. She's if you're not doing Zoom right, she will tell you.
Such as, Daddy, put the loudspeaker on, switch it on, switch it off again. Let's get it sorted.
Why aren't you on full screen?
I know. It's very dangerous. SFX is obviously available, well, I say in the shops now. Well, yeah, you could probably say that. I mean, obviously, as you can tell, this is the subscriber edition, completely free of cover lines, etc. And Darren Scott seems to be doing quite a reasonable job. I mean, obviously...
Exactly.
Not sure about his comment about putting his appendages into strange holes when he's referring to the Flash Gordon sequence with the forest planet, etc. But other than that, yeah, it's great stuff.
I mean, that sequence had a lasting effect on a lot of a certain generation. It was a very scary sequence.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, lots of exciting things, including, as I say, Time that's coming through, Return to Oz, a whole heap of other features that are actually around. And it's great that it's kept going because, I mean, that together with Total Film, of course, the other wonderful magazine that comes through.
You can still buy, you know, even if you can't get into a shop, you can go to myfavoritemagazines.co.uk and you can either subscribe or you can buy individual issues there, and you know the postage is all covered and everything. So
Richard, it's that seamless link that always impresses me. You see the way we actually got the corporate message across there. Fantastic. Yeah. Next time you're in the SFX zone, you should say, by the way, what about this publicity that I'm giving free of charge to all the rest of this business. Finally, any thoughts on Picard? Something we were talking about with Larry Nemeczek earlier, and now obviously it's the third of the new wave of Alex Kurtzman series that have actually worked through there. I possibly felt it had too liberal a use of the F-bomb in too many cases, but that's by the by.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that so much. I actually really liked it to a point. I thought it was a really good sort of progression of the Picard character. I liked... You know, much, I love the Next Generation era, but apart from Deep Space Nine, it was a bit too positive a lot of the time, and I don't think that would have worked now. And I like the way that they made the world a little bit darker, and that Picard, who's just such a wonderful character, because what would Picard do was always a good sort of mantra for life, and you actually realise that in the last 20 years, everything hadn't gone right for him. You know, and I thought that was a really interesting.
He's living with two Romulans, for goodness sakes.
Exactly. Well, how cool was that? But exactly. I thought towards the end of the series, it kind of lost its way a little bit. I think it. I thought it wrapped itself up too neatly. Didn't quite like where it went, and it just sort of went off a bit.
Well,
but yeah, I think I could always watch Patrick Stewart.
Season 2 has been committed to. There's also Strange New Worlds, and I think they're still talking about Section 31.
Lower Decks as well, the animated series.
And as I said earlier, and I share this with Larry Nemeczek and indeed a fellow Trek writer, Chris Dowers, I'm still starting a campaign to bring back Mares and Arex from the animated series, the first animated series. It's worthwhile.
Well, I mean, you know, although the animation wasn't amazing, it had some really good writers on it.
Exactly.
It was proper Star Trek.
DC Fontana effectively opened up a whole range of things. Richard, it's been fabulous connecting with your good self. I think next time we might well try, hopefully, to connect with Tara Bennett, because that'd be quite fun to actually have yourself and Tara online.
We'll always love to see Tara.
But standard practice. I mean, it's a bit like wrapping up an episode of The Prisoner without be seeing you or something. We've got to ask those last two questions. Slight change. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
It's been a magnificent Zoom, thank you.
Not sure whether we need a new noun, but I just thought phoner, well, kind of, but not quite Zoom.
I have a feeling that when the OED publishes its word of the year, I think Zoom is going to be it.
We'll be there, yeah.
As a noun and a verb, yeah.
Well, thank heavens we've managed to assuage people to say, don't worry, if you do a Zoom link, you're not going to have all your details hacked into and strange pornographic images pop up in all sorts of ways. The company sorted it out, you know? Yeah. At least one hopes so, anyway. So the next critical question is, will you be kind enough to return?
That would be wonderful. Lovely, thank you.